What does it take to create brave and memorable advertising and marketing work that wins customers while building your brand? In this episode, Chris Buotha, the Group MD of Park Advertising, shares some of his views from over two decades in the industry. I find out why we are seeing so much work that's forgettable.
So it's the whole ecosystem that has to work together. I always talk about a chair with four legs.
Yeah.
You have a media owner, a media agency, a creative agency, and a client, right? Those four legs, all four legs need to work together. You need to have a brave media owner. You need to have a brave client. You need to have a brave creative agency and a brave media agency. When those four legs of the chair work together, when they are all equally brave, that's when you succeed.
We also discuss what needs to happen for brand messaging and creative work to truly stand out.
And I think that's going back to strategically brave decisions we need to get to. Is that who are you strategically brave enough to make these decisions? That is strategically creative and executionally creative. I think if you can get both of those right, I think you've got the magic.
To help us bring more forward-thinking industry leaders to the lead creative, hit like, share, and subscribe. And hey, if you'd like to keep us fueled between conversations, get us a coffee on the link in the description below. This is The Lead Creative, and I'm your host, Mongezi Mthathi. Welcome to The Lead Creative Podcast, where we talk to creative industry leaders, influencers, and brands. We discuss the strategies that influence brand thinking and shape industries. Thought leaders and heads of agencies let us in on some of their thinking and insights. I'm your host, Mongezi Mthathi. Enjoy the show, and please share and subscribe. Chris, you grew up in Bloemfontein, which is seen as being, you know, off the beaten track as far as culture, advertising, and all the things that you work in are concerned. How do you think growing up there led to where you are today? And looking back, how would old Chris see current Chris?
For me, I think growing up in Bloemfontein was actually a privilege. I think, first of all, you grow up in a very, I think the Free State at the time was still a little bit innocent in a way. So I think you grow up with a level of innocence, which I appreciated. But at the same time, I think there is, you grow up with a level of almost a competitiveness to prove yourself. The closest thing I can probably liken it to, I don't have personal experience, but from having spoken with very many of my African friends, I think it's a bit like the Tsonga. I don't know, you know, the Tsongas are well known as they're a small people group, but they are fiercely competitive, therefore, and they want to stand out, and they want to, you know, I think that I would akin it to that. I think growing up in the Free State creates that for you. I look back at my friends that I went to university with, and our university class, there's guys who have become very big journalists, radio DJs, and media personalities around the world. So I think we punch above our weight, and you kind of get, you get undermined, I don't want to use the word undermined, but underestimated is maybe a good word.
Yes.
I think because you get underestimated, you punch above your weight on purpose.
How do you think that upbringing, that background shaped your outlook on leadership and, I guess, brand building?
Not so much in brand building, but in leadership very much. I think I was very fortunate. My father worked for Pick n Pay for many years of his life, and he was a regional director there. So I think my dad taught me a lot about leadership just in terms of ways, how he led the family. I, obviously, from my personal experience, having seen how he was a leader within his organization. So I think that helped me a lot. So it's not so much the area per se that I would say I've influenced it, but the environment. Listen, I also had the privilege when I was a student, I went to go work at the campus radio station, which was back then used to be called RSFM. I think it's called something else now, but it was the campus radio station in the Free State. I got to work for the Volksblad, which was the newspaper at the time. You know, I did sports reports for OFM, which is the regional radio station in the area. So I think that if I had to guess, that would be part of the the upside to it is that you work in a, because you're on a smaller regional environment, the opportunity for you to jump on opportunities is quicker. So I could work. I could work for radio. When I was a student, I used to DJ. I used to set up music festivals. I used to report for news for news platforms, for newspapers. I did whatever I could. So, and I think that was real.
So it's almost like you were always in the space that you ended up kind of building a career in.
Jack of all trades, master of none. my dream was to become a sports journalist. I wanted to become a sports journalist. So I was dead set on watching rugby and cricket and football for a living and getting paid for it. That didn't happen. My father, very smartly at the time, said to me that if you're a sports journalist, you're not going to make any money. So he said to me, what you must do is you must go ahead and go work in advertising. It's a lot like journalism, but you get paid a bit more money. And I guess I have to thank him for that.
Yeah. You've described yourself as an artist and a scientist, which is an interesting way, I guess, to self-describe in a space that is sort of marketing and advertising. But also in many ways, this space that we work in has very largely now been influenced by measurement, which is another area that you speak of quite a bit in advertising and the media space. How do you keep a balance of this scientific, analytical side with the creative instincts and the rigor that that requires?
I think a lot of people actually make the two mutually exclusive. Like you are either a very creative person or you're a data-driven person. I think that's nonsense. I think you can do both, right? I think God gave us a left brain and a left side of our brain and a right side of our brain. So I think you can use both. So for me, I often say that's what I love about our job. In our job in advertising, my job specifically, I get to use both sides of my brain. There's a lot about our job that is about numbers and understanding numbers and data. And that's not something we should ever shirk away from.
Yeah.
Right. I think a lot of people want to say, okay, well, you don't ever have to focus on creative. Nonsense. You have to still focus on creative as well. So for me, it's the two together. It's the success of holding the two in tension. I don't think they are mutually exclusive. And I don't think anybody who purports that, I think, does themselves any favor. I think the people who will be successful into the future are the people who can hold it to intention, who can look at a table and say, here's the data, here's what the data is telling us, and B, here's what we think is a creative solution to solve for what the data is telling us.
Yeah. You've also said, though, that increasingly the industry relies a lot on the data, a lot on the measurement, and a little less on the creative side of it. And some of the arguments would be that it's because it's largely performance driven and less long-term brand building. What has been your view and I suppose your experience over the past sort of two decades that you've been in the industry? Because you've seen this, you know, these changes and this evolution of the industry.
Yeah, I think what we've lost a bit is the ability to be brave. If you go back to, I'll use an analogy that a lot of people talk about. They say no one ever got fired for doing something safe, right? So I think very often for a lot of people, out of fear, they make decisions, they over-rely on data. You know, data has, if there isn't a data answer for it, then they won't do it, which I think is just fearful. I've often used the example of the BMW campaign that they ran many, many years ago, the Beat the Benz campaign, which... it was a campaign that they ran over a weekend. I don't know whether you're familiar with the story, but the Beat the Benz campaign ran for one weekend. It was a campaign that ran for one weekend, and it changed the world, really, right? Now, the data doesn't back that up at all, right? That's not the from a pure numbers perspective, that wouldn't be a great campaign to run. But from a creativity perspective, it was genius. And I think we've lost a bit of that. You need to be a brave client. You need to be a brave media person. You need to be a brave, creative person to put that on the table. And I think we've lost a bit of that. I think everybody wants to be very safe. I think that, I think we're very aware of the amount of money that we spent on advertising. And therefore, we make very safe decisions for our clients. And I don't think safe is always right. I think safe can become very bland if we're not careful about it.
How do you make the case, though, for courage in these boardrooms where the CMOs would say, or marketers would say, budgets are shrinking not just for agencies but for themselves, and there's increased scrutiny in terms of where that advertising goes, and you know they want the sale next week kind of thing, as opposed to the brand building. How do you make the case at that level for courage, for bravery, for things that cannot be tangibly proven?
I think everything you've just said makes the case for it. I think the fact that there are diminishing budgets, I think the fact that we have to sell quickly, I think the fact that we have to make an impact is exactly the reason we have to be brave. I think too often people look at it the wrong way. The fact that clients are under financial pressure means that they have to be brave. The fact that you have to be the underdog. We have to start fighting like the underdog. I think the fact that you need to be impactful, you need to be brave. And if you go look at the latest AdX numbers, they talk about ad spend in South Africa being 50 billion rand, okay, roughly 50 billion rand. Now, if I said to you now, of the 50 billion rand that is spent on advertising every year, today there was probably 300 million rand spent, okay, on advertising. How much of that 300 million rand that you saw today do you remember? None of it.
Yeah, not much.
You won't remember a billboard you drove past today. You probably didn't hear a radio ad. You know, all of these things. You don't remember ads. So all the more reason that you have to be brave, because if your budget is shrinking, you have to be brave. I worked on Nando's for all my life, but a very large part of my life. And Nando's, what made Nando's successful always was they spent a tenth of what KFC spent, but they were doubly as brave. So they ran brave campaigns, and their noting was exponential. Their standout was exponential, and they punched way above their weight because they were brave, because they decided to stand out. So I think for me, the going according to the data and all of those things is the opposite of brave. I think that's actually stupid sometimes.
Again, you talk to a lot of CMOs who in many instances want to stay very close to what the data proves works. In the conversations that you are having, are you finding that there's the kind of appetite to steer away from the data and do something courageous, do something that bucks whatever the data says? Or are people trying to stick as close to what data is telling them in spite of the fact that, as you've said, their work isn't remembered?
I think I'm not going to be brave enough to put my colors to the mast with one client specifically. But I do think in general, I think clients, for the most part, they want to be brave. But remember, bravery and courage doesn't just come from a client. Us as agencies need a proper kick at the pants as well when it comes to bravery and courage, right? So it is about a client being brave enough to go with an audacious idea, but it's about an agency that presents audacious ideas as well and has a thought through, well-planned, brave, audacious idea. So it's the whole ecosystem that has to work together. I always talk about a chair with four legs. You have a media owner, a media agency, a creative agency, and a client, right? Those four legs, all four legs need to work together. You need to have a brave media owner. You need to have a brave client. You need to have a brave creative agency and a brave media agency. When those four legs of the chair work together, when they are all equally brave, that's when you succeed. The problem is you can have a very brave client and a very meek and mild agency, and you're going to struggle. Or a very brave agency and a very brave client, but a very meek media owner, and you're going to still struggle. So until all four legs of the chair are equally brave, equally courageous, then I think that's when you're going to see the magic.
Yeah. I think sticking with this idea of brave, I mean, I was at an event recently where you spoke about brands and their agencies having to return to brave and crazy. First of all, you've spoken about the Bid the Benz campaign as one of those brave and courageous, bold campaigns. And I guess that is one description. But what do you mean by brave and crazy? And what do you think we've lost as an industry in, I suppose, getting away from this idea of brave and crazy?
I think there's two parts to brave and crazy. I think, first of all, what I would say is I think sometimes it is a creative element of Brave and Crazy. So let me give you an example. If you're going to come up with a TV ad, what's going to make your TV ad different to every other TV ad? Like, is your TV ad truly unique? Like, is it a truly memorable piece of communication? I think that's the one piece. But then I think there are also strategically brave decisions you can make. I think very many clients, as an example, what we've seen, and I'll give you a good example, Pineapple Insurance. Pineapple Insurance decided early on, A, they're going to go brave creative, but also brave media. They could have gone TV, radio, digital, out of home, right? Which most clients would go with. They said, no, we're going to take all of our chips and stick it on out of home. We're going to go all in on out of home, right? And that's brave. I love that. I love that for them. I think it's a very brave decision, and it's clearly paid off for them, is because they have above average noting, because they've taken a big budget and they've stuck it all on out of home. And I think that's going back to strategically brave decisions we need to get to, is that who are you strategically brave enough to make these decisions? That is strategically creative and executionally creative. I think if you can get both of those right, I think you've got the magic.
If you're enjoying The Lead Creative, please share this episode with your network and hit follow or subscribe. Enjoy the show.
So there's this tension, this interesting tension that I've noticed in conversations that I'm having on The Lead Creative. So there are younger creative minds that are truly pushing the envelope, that are shifting the industry, that are creating work that really stands out there, who believe that in their mind, they're creating, they are seeing courageous work. They are seeing work that is brave, that is crazy, that is really doing things. And then there is the other extreme where I talk to seasoned leaders in the industry like yourself, who've seen these trends come and go, who feel as though work isn't brave enough, isn't courageous enough. And somewhere in the middle of these extremes, the one almost consistent thing that we've been talking about now for the past couple of minutes is that there are brands that are not memorable, that are not shifting the needle, that are not, you know, that are not winning customers as much as they used to. What do you think causes this, firstly, this gap in how we see the world and this gap in how brands resonate?
Yeah, I think firstly, for me, I don't think it's an old person, young person thing. I think it's a creative versus an uncreative person, right? So I think we should all be creative people who want to do things differently, right? That I think for me is fundamental to the as a starting point. However, we have to go look at what is stifling creativity, is maybe a better way of looking at it, right? If I said to you now a couple of things that I believe is stifling creativity, I think first of all, it's time pressure. I think more and more, you know, everything gets done so last minute, the amount of times we get a brief and the client wants to be live tomorrow, you know, so if a client wants to have a campaign live tomorrow, they're going to get something that gets conceptualized in 30 minutes, you know, they're not going to get great work. We very seldom have a proper long runway to think through creativity, right? So I think time pressure for me is the first one that impacts 100% impacts creativity. I think secondly, we spoke about it, is budgets. I think more and more conservative approach to budgets, I think doesn't benefit clients. You know, media costs money, creativity costs money, to do good work costs money. So if you want to do that, I think budget is the next thing. And then I think there is a bit of an obsession, I won't say this too loud, but I think there is a bit of an obsession with performance in media, and media people don't do themselves favors because it's now become, okay, well, this idea won't reach your optimal reach level. So because it doesn't have your optimal reach level, we won't do it. I think that's not beneficial for the client necessarily. It's important to have guardrails, but I think the moment you become a slave to your guardrails, I think that's dangerous. And then lastly, I'd say, people who have accepted advertising as a job and not as a passion. I think more and more people in this industry do this because you can make some money. It's not super difficult. And if you're in, you're in. I think a lot of people who I work with on a day-to-day basis would echo this, that there is a loss of passion. The people who really want to do great work, who want to create their work to stand out, who want to do different, who want to have their name up in lights, I think we've lost a bit of that in the ad industry.
You mentioned pineapple, and I think from the rise of pineapple that we've seen, there's this sort of anecdotal talk of the resurgence of out of home. And from someone who kind of sees this all the time, are we really seeing a resurgence of out of home? Because I remember when I saw that started seeing that pineapple work, there was a change in the category as a result because of what pineapple was doing. And it might have been just me, but I started looking out for out of home. I started looking at what brands were doing because of what was happening in the copywriting, the thinking, and how captivating some of the work was. So are we really seeing a resurgence in out of home? And what has changed in the past 3 to 5 years in this space?
100%. I have no doubt about it. Listen, out of home comes with a bucket load of challenges, which we'll talk about just now, right? But I think if you go look at what Pineapple did when they went all in on out of home, and by the way, they're not the first ones to do it. I think you might be a bit young, but there used to be a bank called 2020. When 2020 launched many years ago, they did exactly the same thing. They went all in on out of home. They bought every billboard in the whole town, and they went all in on that. So I love that. But where we are at the moment is that media is becoming increasingly skippable, right? Mm-hmm. From the skip ad that you have on YouTube to being able to skip ads and pay to skip ads with a premium subscription across a variety of media platforms. I think media is becoming increasingly skippable. You can avoid advertising if you want to. You don't have to see ads if you don't want to, right? Except with out of home. Out of home is the one media type that you can be as rich as you want. If you're driving along the roads of Johannesburg, you're going to see billboards, baby. So I think there's still a ton of – I think the fact that it is absolutely unskippable, I think, is powerful. Mm. I think also we have more and more clients who want to invest their money with the local media owner. You know, so as an example, we have some clients who say to us that we want to know we spend money with black-owned media owners. Now, Google is not black-owned. Facebook is not black-owned. TikTok is not black-owned. Most TV stations is not necessarily a majority black-owned. So if you want to spend money with communities on the ground, the two media types you can look at really is community radio and billboards. So that's the other reason why we're seeing big growth in billboards is wanting to attract local money. And what we are seeing is that out of home as a platform is growing in share. There's definitely a growth in share from – I looked at our numbers the other day from 2015 to 2025, and out of home nearly doubled in share. So I think out of home as a medium is a great medium and will continue to grow and be strong.
There's something that I've been sort of having debates about. I think you mentioned skippable media, and I want to kind of double click on that a little bit, because there's something that I've been debating with people in my circles and in the industry a little bit, right, that are increasingly living in an on-demand kind of world where we are in these environments where we pay to not see ads, we pay to not even skip the ads, we just don't see them. And the one of the places that you can't skip the ads, as you say, is out of home. It's in that kind of space. What has that meant in terms of the shift of one in advertising spend and in how we even discover brands as consumers? Because in my very closed environment of whatever I stream, I'm less likely to even know a Pineapple, which is a challenger brand from my current insurer, because they can't interrupt me, I suppose, for my viewing.
Yeah, so in the past, again, going back many years, you used to have magazine advertising, right? And then a magazine, you'd be able to, or a newspaper article, right? And you'd have a piece of editorial, and you'd have an ad, and you could see the ad, and you could read the editorial, and you could find out more about the brand and get to know the brand a lot better, which is, I mean, print in essence is dying. But I think what's interesting now is the mix of digital platforms together with traditional platforms. So as an example, what's the interplay between out of home and Google search? So this is something that we're tracking at the moment, is to say, okay, cool. Well, when our out of home campaign goes up and we have more exposure, does that, and for brand X, do we see an uplift in search for brand X? Yeah. And so for me, the interplay is stretching a bit in terms of trying to see like the digital platforms that we use, how do they interact with traditional media platforms to make your campaign holistic?
So seeing as people are in this, you know, environment of, I suppose, not seeing ads in a traditional sense, where do brands realistically stand out? Where are the spaces that brands can creatively and strategically, I guess, stand out to be noticed in a meaningful way for us to form those meaningful connections that we have with brands that we've known for the past 10, 20 years?
Mm. Yeah, I think ironically, we go full circle in our discussion again. I don't think media is where they stand out. It's by how. It's creative.
Yes.
Again. Okay, so can you stand out on TV? Yes. Can you stand it on radio? Yes. Can you stand it in digital? Yes. Can you stand it in out of home? Absolutely. In all of those platforms, you can stand out. It's in the how that you stand out again. Mm-hmm. So I think that for me is the magic sauce always, is how do we go back to saying, are we creating TV ads that stand out? Are we creating TikTok content pieces that stand out? Are we creating streaming audio ads that stand out? You know, it's not about the platform for me. It's more around the creativity in the creation. Are we creating work that stands out?
Yeah. So I don't like getting too much into trends, but sometimes trends give us a sense of what's happening. What are some of the trends that you are seeing right now? I mean, you mentioned this interesting interplay between out of home and Google, between search and sort of what happens in the real world. You've mentioned that. And one of the things that I've noticed is with a pineapple, for instance, just to go back to that, or even some automotive brands, that when I talk to people in Cape Town, they're like, what is that? It's like there's also this regional growth.
That's right.
Yeah. So what are some of these trends that you're seeing that are interesting that even sometimes brands or even creative people might be missing in our, you know, talk and many discussions about AI, which seems to be the sole discussion point of late?
It's crazy. Yeah. Listen, I don't think there's anything new under the sun, but I do think what we are seeing more of, I think, is the disintermediation of the advertising agency. And I'll qualify that, right?
Yeah.
So if you go look as an example at what Kylie Jenner did, go look at what Ryan Reynolds did with his gin brands, go look more and more at celebrity, basically, celebrity brands and celebrity using their own endorsements. Mr. Beast, a very good example as well. But I think that for me is an area where we're seeing people becoming the platform in a way, like the person becoming the media type themselves. I think for me that at a macro scale, a Mr. Beast as an example, a macro influencer, a macro business owner, you know, like becoming this entity in and of himself. And then I think if you were to funnel that all the way down to the bottom, I think something a lot of brands speak about a lot over the past few years, but I do think it's very relevant, is the role of influencers, human influencers.
Yeah.
And I'm not talking about now wanting Bonang to tweet on your behalf. I'm talking about nano influencers. Seeing your girlfriend from across the road doing a hair shampoo ad and saying, well, Pantene is great for my hair, so therefore I'm going to start using Pantene. So I think for me the let's call it the human being as the media, as the advertising platform. I think that for me is what's fascinating at the moment, and I think is picking up nice momentum.
What's causing that though, besides the fact that we resonate, I suppose, with people more than with, I guess, brands trust. In some instances?
The answer is simple. It's trust. It's trust. You try, like, you're more likely to trust a human being. And by the way, the reason I believe it'll only grow more is because of AI. You know, AI nowadays, you see videos online. Is that real or is it AI? You see pictures online. Is it real or is it AI? I think human beings become, we become less trusting of a lot of platforms, right? Whereas if I see a picture or a video of somebody I know using a product, I'm far more likely to be enticed to it because of there's a level of relationship and there's a level of trust. So I do think that will play a massive role.
So, Chris, when we started the conversation, we spoke about, I mean, your experience in the industry, and I think we keep going back to that. You've had this front row seat of seeing multiple shifts in the industry from digital to hyper-targeting to broad reach to all of this kind of work that brands are doing. Looking back, what's the one lesson in media or brand building that you think we are either forgetting or losing sight of?
I would say, you know, our job is simple. Our job is to connect a brand with a consumer. Mm. In the end, that's simply what advertising is. We say, here's a brand and here's a consumer, right? I want to introduce the two to each other. So from a media perspective, what I'm saying is I need to go find the right brand and find the right consumer and bring the two together. And the language that the two will speak to each other will be creativity, right? So I think we overcomplicate things sometimes. I think for me, that's if we just go back to the simple principle of connecting a brand with a consumer, I think you'll go very far. Then I think just another thing, I know you asked for one, but I'm going to give you two just because I've got the microphone so I can run with it now, is I think that it's a very old adage, but I think it's still a very relevant adage. There was a saying I heard once that said, stop interrupting the thing I'm interested in and start becoming the thing I'm interested in. Mm-hmm. I'm a big believer in that. So if you are a brand, and I'll use an example. If you're a brand who puts an ad during the rugby that interrupts my rugby viewing because I'm a rugby viewer, I'm going to be upset with you because you are interrupting the thing I'm interested in. If you are a brand that very smartly integrates with the rugby, that you become the thing I'm interested in, all of a sudden, that for me is a game changer. So that's a principle, by the way. That's a principle that was true 30 years ago. That's a principle that is still true today. Stop interrupting the thing I'm interested in. Start becoming the thing I'm interested in.
If you're enjoying The Lead Creative, please share this episode with your network and hit follow or subscribe. Enjoy the show.
Yeah, start becoming the thing I'm interested in. I think that is definitely a theme that is common in very many of our conversations, because I guess there's also this notion that, going back to the data part of it, that it leads to work, advertising that looks like advertising. Like, brands are creating work that looks like it's advertising, and it 100%. Feels
fully agree
like it is. Are we becoming more and more like that, or are some brands becoming less like that? Because, and I think, just to go to something that's slightly unrelated, but to bring it in here, is that I'm starting to see brands that, in my mind, don't belong in certain places, right? Like a cereal brand on LinkedIn, for instance. Like, there's a cereal brand I follow on LinkedIn. There is a canned water brand, for instance, that is also very active on LinkedIn. So I'm saying they don't belong, because you would expect them to play on the Facebook, for instance, rather than there. And I suppose that's one of the creative spaces. So what are some of these kinds of things that brands are doing creatively like that, that make them stand out in certain spaces?
For me, it goes back to a very basic principle of storytelling. I think there are very many great brands that are just great storytellers, right? And I think that, for me, is something that I think the winners will succeed at. So I'll give you an example. Red Bull. I think Red Bull, like, as a in terms of what they do with their Red Bull content, that, I mean, they do advertise, they do make ads, But also what Red Bull also does incredibly well is that they make excellent content. I love watching Red Bull stuff. Whenever they've got that, I think it's called the Art of Flight. You know, the Red Bull content about whether it be somebody parasailing or jumping off something tall or anything like that, or the planes flying through all of their things. I love that. I think it's phenomenal content, and I would gladly watch that. That is something I am interested in versus opposed to interrupting something I'm interested in.
Yeah.
So I think going forward, brands will find ways to story tell on a platform. So if let's use your example of a breakfast cereal on LinkedIn, I think if you can story tell the importance of breakfast to a successful and productive business day on LinkedIn in a very smart, funny, intelligent, helpful way, a LinkedIn strategy could be genius. But if you're just trying to tick a box because you're trying to reach businessmen or businesswomen, then you're wasting your time. You are on the wrong platform.
Over the next 5 or so years, do you think we'll see more brave, culturally resonant work that sometimes, even with the pressures of measurement and short-term performance, continues to want to stand out?
Oof, Mongezi. So let me tell you, I think we're standing at a precipice at the moment. I think we're standing on a knife's edge at the moment. I think I'm an eternal optimist, so I'm hoping, of course, yes, we're going to see amazing, creative, funny, brilliant communication. But you know what worries me immensely is I think we run the risk of AI-generated content en masse produced for AI-generated media platforms. I think that's my biggest fear is that the human creativity will be disintermediated by AI. And you're going to get a whole lot of ads that all look the same because they were all created by one or two AI platforms. And they're not going to have any imagination to it. A computer will never have the imagination of a human being. So I worry. I do worry. I'm hoping that AI will remain the tool that it is, that people will use AI for brand new creative concepts and ideation. But I'm deeply worried that 5 years from now, to your question, we are in a world where AI produces all ads and it is boring as hell.
Yeah, that's interesting.
I hope I'm wrong.
I hope so too, because we would lose a lot of the beauty of the creative work that we celebrate today. Chris, we usually ask our guests to pass the mic to our next guest by leaving a question about marketing, advertising, brand building, or even creative process. Our previous guest was Suhail Limbada, the CMO of KFC Thailand. And the question he left for you was, what's your biggest fear about how you're going to use the next 5 years of your life?
Sure. Okay. So, by the way, I'm good friends with Suhail. He's a lovely guy. I've got a lot of time for him. Yeah, I legend, think for me, the biggest fear for me is that through building technology solutions, which we are using AI, etc., we end up killing ourselves. I think we end up building the thing that will wipe us out. That is my biggest fear. I sometimes feel a bit like, I don't know whether you ever watched the movie Oppenheimer, you know, where Oppenheimer guy who built the atomic bomb, right? And as he's building it, he keeps asking himself the question, is this the thing I'm building that's going to wipe out humanity? Right? Am I building the thing that's going to wipe out humanity? And as we are building AI and technology, my biggest fear is, are we building the thing that will one day wipe out advertising? That's my biggest fear.
How do we prevent from doing that? Being that, again, I mean, the gift and curse of creativity, of innovation is to build things that are much bigger than your own imagination.
Yeah, I must be honest with you, I don't know what the answer is. I think as we need to always keep humanity at the center of AI. Like the moment we take humanity out of it, we need brave human beings, man. Again, going back to brave and crazy, like, are we brave enough to say no? Are we brave enough to say whatever the computer is spitting out is not the answer? Are we brave enough to say, well, what the computer is doing is better than what we're doing? You know, I think we need to keep humanity at the center of advertising. I'm terrified that at some point in time we're going to get to the point where all advertising is automated, one big automated platform where some client goes in, he puts in his budget, and he presses play, and the system spits out an ad for him, the system spits out a media schedule for him, and he presses play, and it all goes and runs across the internet. And thank you for coming. No human ever touched it. And no human will ever have an impact in it. That's my nightmare, because that's all of us out of a job. Pessimistic, right?
No, but it's, I mean, it's good because again, this thing of having a creative mind, being a creative person, being an innovative person is both a gift and, I guess, you know, the curse, I suppose, equally. But more often than not, it's a gift because it's how we created what we did for humanity at the same time. Chris, it's now your turn to pass the mic to our next guest by leaving them a question about advertising, marketing, the creative process, and anything with regards to, I guess, brand building.
Sure. Okay, cool. I'm going to come up with this one on the spot and on the fly, but I'd say, what are you going to do today that's going to make the advertising and marketing industry a better industry 10 years from now? That would be my question. What can we do today that will make the industry a better industry 10 years from now?
Amazing question.
Chris, good luck to whoever's answering that.
Thank you so much for making the time. I really appreciate it. I think we got a lot to think about from this conversation about creating brave and crazy work, about seeing, knowing, understanding, but sometimes overlooking the data to create something courageous, something brave, something that the data sometimes tells us not to do.
100%. Thank you, Mongezi. I appreciate the opportunity. 100%. I love that, like, a time spending together.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to The Lead Creative. Did you get one insight that's worth sharing from this episode? Please share it with your network or your friends. Pop me some of your ideas and innovative finds on Twitter on @Mongezi. This podcast is available on Spotify, Stitcher, Apple, Google, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. You can also find me on mongezi.com.